Thank you for downloading the Beacon Podcast. This is part two of our silver manipulation episode. Mr. Matt.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs.
Yeah. Bitch better have my money. Thomas Jefferson would approve of this.
For sure.
He'd be a Rihanna fan.
Yes, definitely.
But instead of blop, 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 he'd be like, blop. Feel it. Pack, pack, pack. Click. Blop.
Don't fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Oh, welcome back to the Beacon Podcast.
Doing it live.
Yep. Take that down a little bit. That is Rihanna with Bitch Better Have My Money.
I wonder what bitch she's talking about.
I don't know. But
it sounds like it's the bitch is some dude, because she talks about stealing the dude's wife and throwing her in the back of the car.
It sounds like her financial acumen is very good, so mm-hmm. I bet that she's, probably does, like, speculating and futures trading on her off time. It's very technical jargon. Bitch better have my money.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one had the crazy music video to it.
Yeah, with the girl in the back, like, she gagged her up.
She, like, kills her, right? And she's got, like, blood all over her or something.
I think so.
It's really, she's a really good influence on our youth.
Absolutely.
What up, Nick? What's going on, buddy?
Just living the dream over here. Podcasting with you. It's been awesome.
Yes.
I wish she would just, like, I liked her songs when she's talking about getting freaky.
When she's getting freaky?
She's, some of her lyrics about getting freaky sexually.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's an interesting lady.
Is she?
Yeah.
Is she a lady in a street in the streets?
But a freak in the sheets. I'd imagine.
I'd be afraid to take her money, to tell you the truth.
I would never take her money.
No. So, just to put you guys into the studio with us, we have papers everywhere on this episode because we've done a good amount of research on it. If you guys, I would highly suggest listening to our last episode, Silver Manipulation number 1, so that you can have a background on a lot of the stuff we're going to be talking in this one, Silver Manipulation number 2. And we are going to make the case that silver is being manipulated to the downside. And this would probably be a good time to highly recommend that you guys call Swiss America Trading for your gold and silver buying needs. We highly recommend them. You can call them at area code 602-788-4653. That's 602-788-4653. Ask to talk to Gary Belson and tell him that you heard about Swiss America Trading on the Beacon Podcast. You guys are going to want to protect your assets in the years to come, because the central banks just keep inflating your money supply and devaluing your currency. So, go for it.
Oh, I thought you were looking for something else. But we appreciate the download. I'm glad you came to visit us. I hope you enjoy yourself. We would love feedback from you. If you like what you hear, or even if you don't, you can hit us up on Facebook at the Beacon Podcast. We are on Twitter at Beacon Podcast, or email would be great at thebeaconpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can now catch us on Twitter. We're on Twitter also. So just search for the Beacon Podcast on Twitter and you will see us.
Yeah, Twitter is my favorite way to get through.
Yeah, Twitter.
It's just
Twitter's
faster,
good.
Quicker. Yeah.
Although we do appreciate all your guys' attention on Facebook recently.
Yeah, that's been cool.
Yes. So All right, so just to kind of recap what we talked about on our last episode, and we do apologize. We meant to meet last week. We told you guys we would meet last week, and we didn't because Nick had some unfortunate stuff. He had a funeral that you had to attend.
But, you know, that's part of life.
Yeah. But we're back, so... And we are going to continue. So last week, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about basically the history of silver, all the way up from the European 1300s and the banking collapse, to the Dark Ages, to the rise of China, and their main currency system was silver, to the Spanish Empire trading with China in silver, to the British Empire jacking China of all their silver in the Opium Wars.
Jacking them.
To the issuing of silver and gold in the founding of our country and our bimetallic system. When they created our country, they created a system, a bimetallic system of currency, where silver and gold, the price of them were tied to each other, and they were both accepted as money. And that stayed pretty constant. They changed the ratio, the value ratio of gold to silver from 15 to 1 to 16 to 1. And that pretty much was the whole story there until 1873. And the crime of 1873, when we demonetized, I shouldn't say we, I should say the financial interests in England, coaxed our Congress into passing the crime of 1873 that demonetized silver and made silver not money anymore. So we're going to kind of continue with that just a little bit. After that, the next major thing that happened was the establishment of the Federal Reserve and their issuance of paper money for gold deposits. And within 20 years, the Federal Reserve managed to bankrupt the country. And we actually had to declare bankruptcy in 1933. And at that point, gold was confiscated. Franklin D. Roosevelt signed a bunch of really like draconian laws all in like 1 week. And he said it was in response to the Great Depression. Europe had just gone off the gold standard, and people in America were fearing that the same thing was going to happen. And we had runs on the bank. People would go into the bank and demand gold for their certificates, and FDR had to close the banks. He called it a bank holiday. And
So you couldn't cash out or physically own it at all.
Well, you couldn't even go to the bank. He closed all the banks, so people couldn't get their deposits out. That same week, he issued Executive Order 6102, and that allowed for the confiscation of gold. He required that everybody bring their gold to a Federal Reserve depository, turn in their gold, and he would pay, and the government, or not the government, but that Federal Reserve institution would pay the person $20 per ounce. And it was a crime punishable by a hefty fine or 10 years in prison.
If you're caught with physical gold?
Yeah, if you're caught with physical gold. It made it illegal to own physical gold. So, and that's what happened after the bankruptcy of the country. Really, they became bankrupt. The government owed the Federal Reserve this money, and they probably had to pay them off with this gold that they confiscated from the public, right? So, the next major thing that happened after that was... after World War II, the before the war ended, the Allies, it looked like the Allies were going to win the war. They had the Germans on the run because the Germans were dumb enough to attack the Russians in the wintertime, which is historically, that is a absolute failure. That's how Napoleon failed. Well, that's how Hitler failed also. So it looked like the Allies were going to win the war. So they had this Bretton Woods conference where they started putting together a plan for basically a new world economic system that would take form after the war ended. And this was done like what they said they were doing, why they said they were having this conference is because they wanted all the governments of the world to start to agree rather than war, because everybody was really getting sick of war. And so they had this Bretton Woods conference, and in it, the dollar became the world's reserve currency. All of the countries of the world could deposit their gold with the United States, the United States would issue them dollars, Federal Reserve notes. And those Federal Reserve notes is what had to be exchanged internationally for commodities, like for oil. So if you're going to buy and sell oil or other commodities, you had to buy and sell it in U.S. dollars. And so it created a high demand for U.S. dollars. So that's what propped the value of the dollar up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
It's scary to think that once they have all the gold or whoever obtains it, the value of your dollar could just be nothing eventually. We're taking all of the physical metals, and then eventually that piece of paper you got is literally worthless at some point.
Well, so the reason why it had worth is because we said that we would not inflate the currency. We would not print more than we had gold deposited in our vaults. And at any time...
And we kept our word on that.
And at any time, these countries could come back and that they could exchange their dollars for their gold again. Mm. That was the agreement. And they also established the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, which acted like a central bank for all of other countries' central banks. Okay? And that's still in effect. The International Monetary Fund is still in effect. And it's going to come up later in this show. Because it's looking like what's happening, what's shaping, is that the dollar and other world currencies have been devalued so much that it's looking like a new world currency is going to take form. Mm-hmm. And it's going to probably be issued by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and it's going to be something called a SDR basket, special drawing rights, where it's a collection of different world currencies. That's coming up later in the show. So that process continued until 1971. You had so during the 60s, we had Vietnam and these other countries that had their gold deposited with us started to see how much we were spending on our war effort. And they were like, how are these guys getting that much money? Mm-hmm. Are they printing more currency than they have gold reserves on deposit? So the first to speak out was France, and France came up to us and said, hey, we'd like to exchange these dollars and we'd like to have our gold back.
Yeah.
And Nixon, I do have a kind of a cool sound clip. Let's go back to I want to go back to that gold confiscation with Franklin D. Roosevelt. I like putting in some of these old audio clips so that we can kind of like relive history a little bit. So yeah. After that closing of the bank holiday, FDR is like almost publicly issuing like a threat to the people not to hoard money, because that's what caused that like banking crisis.
It is possible that when the banks resume, a very few people who have not recovered from their fear may again begin withdrawals. Let me make it clear to you that the banks will take care of all needs, except, of course, the hysterical demands of hoarders. And it is my belief that hoarding during the past week has become an exceedingly unfashionable pastime in every part of our nation. It needs no prophet to tell you that when the people find that they can get their money, that they can get it when they want it, for all legitimate purposes, the phantom of fear will soon be laid. People will again be glad to have their money where it will be safely taken care of, and where they can use it conveniently at any time. I can assure you, my friends, that it is safer to keep your money in a reopened bank than it is to keep it under the mattress. The success of our whole national program depends, of course, on the cooperation of the public, on its intelligent support, and its use of a reliable system. Remember that the essential accomplishment of the new...
Okay, anyways, you guys get it. That's a little history there. That's FDR basically telling people, stop hoarding money, which you should be allowed to do. They shouldn't have a banking system that would collapse if everybody got their money out. I mean, that tells you right there that it's always skewed in the favor of the banks.
And I remember my grandparents. I had one grandfather. It was like my great-grandfather who came from that era, you know. Sorry, man. Why don't we do a show at 8 million phone calls? We don't know. He probably had mason jars buried out by in his yard.
Yeah.
And all these other locations just full of money.
Yeah.
It was all just cash that he kept.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, that really is going to apply to, like, the lesson of this whole series of shows that we're doing is that... I personally believe that the whole foundation of this system is deposits of real money, which is gold and silver. And if everybody bought gold and silver, it would show how inflated the system is on printed currency, or now it's digital currency, off of those reserves. It would absolutely crash the system if everybody bought physical gold and silver, to the point where if it ends up happening one day and the system crashes, just like FDR there is kind of blaming people for hoarding money, the people that bought gold and silver are going to be blamed for a financial crash. Owning precious metals will again be outlawed. It very much could happen. I personally believe that's going to happen, which is why, sorry to say, but I think you guys should call Swiss America Trading and get some of this shit while you still can. I should mention too that we had something called the Coinage Act of 1965, where Lyndon B. Johnson actually debased the silver content in our quarters. So they started having quarters in circulation for the probably the last at least 40, 50, 60 years. And these quarters in circulation were still constitutional money. They had 90% silver content in them. And in 1965, Lyndon B. Johnson changed the silver content in our coins from 90% to 40% in a lot of our coins. Actually, it was in dimes and quarters, and he reduced the Kennedy half dollars from 90% to 40% pure. This was signed because people were hoarding silver as the value of paper money dropped due to that inflationary war spending of Vietnam. Then you had France come in and say, hey, we want our gold back. And Nixon was in office at that point, and he ended up saying no. And so he basically closed the gold window, which he prohibited now countries from coming, getting their gold back. And here's a little something from Nixon.
The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States. Now, what does this action, which is very technical, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action, in other words, will be to stabilize the dollar.
Stabilize the dollar. Really, it's a game of gold and silver. It's a game of bankers owning more and more gold and silver. And it's just, these guys are professional thieves, and this is how they confiscate it over the years. After that, dollars were no longer convertible for gold, and we issued a disguised threat. And that disguised threat was, okay, you guys, we're not converting your dollars for gold anymore. And at this point, we were like the world's military superpower. Part of that Bretton Woods Agreement, too, was that we used our Navy to protect the world's shipping lanes. And so the world's economy was kind of based off of our Navy protecting them. Well, we ended up saying that, yes, you cannot convert your dollars into gold, but if you keep using the dollar in exchange for commodities, we still want it to be the reserve currency. And if you keep using the dollar in exchange for commodities, we'll protect you with our military. Which is a disguised threat, because what that really means is if you stop using the dollar to trade, we're going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
And so we see that trend happening. A lot of people don't know this, but before we attacked Iraq, Saddam Hussein started making oil deals in gold.
Yeah, with the dinar, and wanted to the currency to be dinar, right?
Same with Gaddafi. Gaddafi started doing oil deals in gold. Now we have major things happening. Iran did the same thing. Now,
and they have their own central bank, I believe.
It's tough to tell. I've tried to look into that too. It's tough to tell. I don't know. But they are trading oil with other nations for gold. And what are we doing now? Absolutely threatening them with our military, right? We see all the propaganda, the anti-Iranian propaganda in our media. Now you've got major trade deals of oil with Russia, China, India that are being proposed in gold. And now you see tensions increasing with us and those nations. So it's looking like a lot of those dollars that were being used for this world trade are starting to come back home because people aren't wanting them as much. And they're not buying and selling commodities in dollars. They're making direct deals with each other. So the term that you'll hear used for purchasing and selling oil with the dollar is the petrodollar. That's why it's called the petrodollar, is because we said that if you still buy and sell oil in dollars, we'll protect you with our military. That established what was called the petrodollar, because it was really the oil dollar, you know. And now that's starting to fall apart. So we can kind of see that this money power that grabbed hold of our nation after the establishment of the Federal Reserve, this is the third time that that money power has gained a hold of our economic system. We had the Federal Reserve is actually the third central bank in this country. That money power is one of the reasons why we declared our independence from England. That money power comes from the Bank of England, who those bankers that are based out of London, that is basically like the world's financial center, right? those are the same people that were the bankers. They were earlier from Amsterdam. They were doing the same banking practices in Amsterdam. They moved to Amsterdam after they fled from Venice. They were doing the same banking practices in Venice, and they were the Venetian bankers who were like the world's most powerful bankers back in Venice. They came from Rome, and an author named Joseph Farrell in Babylon's Banksters actually traces them back to BC times, and they were still into banking back then, but he traces them back to ancient Babylon. So we can kind of see a descendancy of the ancient Babylonian bankers into the current money threat that we have today, which is very, very interesting. So that's to kind of catch us all up on the history of silver and gold issuance and manipulation in this country. What we're going to move to next is we're going to move to the story of the Hunt brothers, because this really kind of helps make the case that
the manipulation tactics.
The manipulation tactics and
they were essentially huge hoarders. Like, they started going nuts with it.
And so we're going to get into that after the break. But just to kind of catch up a little bit, I didn't get to ask you how you're doing, Nick.
Oh, good. Watched that debate the other day. That's big news, I guess.
What'd you think of that?
It was a fucking joke.
Joke.
Dude. I love that all the people are comparing us to Idiocracy now. Like, they're doing Idiocracy screenings in parks and stuff like that. Like,
are they?
Look
really?
How far we've come. Like, this is horrible.
We did a show on that.
Yeah,
we did a show called Idiocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but you know, with but also in the news, I guess you know, we were talking about Facebook. What's the guy who started Facebook?
Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he's trying to edit people's like the things they put on social media.
Mm-hmm.
He's going through it. Like, he'll be able to edit people's social media. Like, if they don't like a post or whatever, they take it down.
They'll take it down, but they won't like change it. They won't change the actual words that you're writing.
Yeah,
they'll take it down.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I said edit. Censor.
Yeah, censor.
Yeah, he's going to be out censoring it, but. Yeah.
Really? And what have they said, like, publicly, what specific subjects they're going to censor?
No. The story was just saying he's going to go in with people from other countries and censor social media. And like they do in other... They do already do that in other countries, but...
Sure. And everybody's kind of got to know that he has the right to do that, actually.
Yeah.
It's his company. It's not a public utility or anything. Just know, I mean, if it ends up getting censored enough to where people feel like their ability to express themselves is stifled, they'll probably move to another platform if we keep this country relatively free to where you can have a choice. Because something else will spring up then that's uncensored, and everybody will flock to it.
Yeah, exactly. Do they want free speech, free thinking, you know?
Especially on like a social media, because mm-hmm. that's the place to get your ideas out. That's the new agora or whatever. Like, isn't the agora was where in ancient Athens, where all the philosophers and public would go to listen to them talk and debate and
yeah.
You know, like, Facebook, social media is the modern agora, right?
Yeah, and not even to post, but to get information, you know. Mm-hmm. But going back to the debate, like, I thought this is something I just have to watch, you know.
Same here.
I don't like either person, but I thought, well, maybe they'll say something with value, and I got nothing out of it. Like, basically, Donald Trump has no constitutional knowledge, you know, and he brought that out.
He doesn't even bring it up, really, right?
No, he didn't bring up the Constitution, but he brought up stop and frisk.
He's, right.
They're like, what do you do about crime? He goes, "We terrific, you know. Well, I'm going to be terrific at it. You know, in New York, I saw the crime go down because we did stop and frisk, and it was terrific. You know, this and that." I'm going, And the mediator actually goes, well, that was found to be unconstitutional
in New York.
Yeah, and I'm going, yeah. You fucking idiot, dude. He goes, No, I disagree.
You know, I disagree.
Yeah, okay. you don't just get to disagree with the Constitution, motherfucker. Yeah. You're running for president.
Well,
you
know? Here's one thing that absolutely pisses me off is that people don't understand the purpose of rule of law. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's rule of law, and then there's rule of man. And this goes back to ancient times when a king could just issue whatever law he wanted to at a drop of a hat, and there were no rules at what laws he could issue. He could say, don't wear this type of hat on Thursdays, and that would be law. When we moved and humanity started moving to rule of law, the law was even above the king at that time. Like, that was like part of the Magna Carta in 1215, is that people called King, I believe it was King John, to the carpet they had grievances against the king, and they basically at a sword point made him sign this thing that basically said, okay, I won't take certain rights from you guys. And if I do, you guys can eject me from government. So law started to be higher than kings. Yeah. That's why we have rule of law. You can't just have somebody become president that goes, yeah, we're going to do stop and frisk. Well, that violates the Fourth Amendment. That's why we have these laws. And the ignorance of people absolutely kills me that they don't know this stuff.
Or that we just follow these laws, whatever it is. You know, like people who want, you know, marijuana is finally kind of less criminalized, I guess. But like for so long, it was like, if the majority wants it, don't follow the fucking rules. Like if you don't want, if you know, a speeding ticket, say, for example, something stupid like that, don't fucking pay it. Like if the majority of us revolt against, you know, stupid laws, they can't enforce them. Like,
but the problem is most people are cowards. They won't do it.
I think, in one scenario, we used to have the camera, the intersection cameras.
Yeah.
And people kept fighting them and saying, and not paying for them. Guess what? Government didn't make money off them. Guess what? We don't have camera lights anymore.
Right. Yeah.
It's, if enough people fight it,
they'll only get away with what they can get away with.
Yeah.
And if we keep
what
giving
we let
them
get
inches,
away with.
They'll keep taking them. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, like, with the freeway, I mean, out here you can hardly ever go the fucking speed limit, so crowded or whatever, but, like, our cars are so, you know, the speed limits are so antiquated, you know, it's like, we have disc brakes, fuel-injected engines, and suspensions where you could drive safely at 80 to 100 miles an hour if you weren't a fucking idiot. But we live in California with all these dipshits that can't even fucking go 55 correctly. But I mean, my point is, and this is a dumb example, but like, if we all wanted to drive 80, 90 miles an hour, they couldn't pull us all over.
Well,
and they would have to make a change.
Well, like, isn't that like there are some like very rural states that don't have speed limits that kind of can just trust their population to drive safely?
I don't know any, you know, I don't know of any in America, but
I thought it's like Montana. There's areas that didn't have speed limits.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I did see a study that showed like, if when they don't post speed limits, people naturally will just drive at a safe speed limit for, then, you know, the majority of people will drive a safe speed limit.
Nobody wants to get hurt. Well, same with like legalizing drugs. And we have that drug war episode, but I'm a staunch believer that the government shouldn't legislate morality. Like, it's not the government's job to make sure that you are not doing drugs, not drinking, not eating bad foods. And that's when we keep giving them that power, they'll take it. Because for them, it's money and it's control.
Yeah, and your point, the government's always been on the wrong side of morality, if you ask me, you know.
Well, look at what
segregation
the drug war's
was legal.
Done.
Slavery was legal, you know.
Right. Well, look at what the drug war's done. It's made a whole underclass of people that make money in the black market off of drugs, because you're not going to stop people who are addicted to drugs from doing them. You're just not going to.
No.
Especially not through laws. What you're going to do is create a criminal class. You're going to fill up the prisons with people that haven't hurt anybody. They just have a problem. They just want to get high.
Mm-hmm.
And you make it really you end up ruining their lives. You make it so they can't get jobs ever again, and you make it so that they have to belong to these gangs so that they can make some kind of money, and then they fall into drug dealing, which is the only reason why gangs exist, is because drugs are illegal.
That is supplied by the CIA, by the way. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Hunt brothers. But in the spirit of how awesome that debate was, we give you this. That was Guttermouth with Party of Two.
Well, it's two. Yeah, those guys are hilarious, man.
I dig it.
Yeah,
I dig it. That's perfect for that debate.
Yeah,
that goofiness.
You gotta see those guys live. They're great.
All right, the Hunt brothers. So what the media portrayed these guys as, they portrayed them as market manipulators who tried to push silver prices up by gaining a huge long position. So if you guys don't know kind of how the market works, as people buy more and more of something, anything, as demand increases, the price of it goes up. As more and more people sell something, the demand decreases and the price of it goes down. That's like a major market thing. So they were accusing these guys of trying to push silver prices up by buying a lot of it. Okay. And the truth is that they initially invested because they thought it was a good investment. And eventually, though, they saw that it was a way to take down this this money power, this oligarchy, and that's frequently called the Eastern Establishment. And we'll get into that on later shows, that there are two major groups that are kind of at war with each other in the country. And it's not Republicans versus Democrats, contrary to what a lot of people believe. So they were trying to take down the oligarchic Eastern establishment banking system. The Rockefellers have historically been the figurehead of that Eastern establishment. The Hunt brothers were huge rivals with the Rockefellers. Hunt brothers were huge supporters of the Libertarian Party when it first opened up.
The Rockefellers were?
No, the Hunt brothers.
Oh, the Hunts were. Okay.
The Hunt brothers were.
That makes more sense.
So they believed that currency should be backed by precious metals, and they'd been very successful in other businesses. They had businesses in oil, real estate, sugar. They had pizza parlors. They bought and sold cattle. They had a football team. I think they owned the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at one point.
Oh, man.
They had racehorses, a bunch of different. They were billionaires.
Yeah.
Very successful. But rivals to the Rockefellers, right?
Yeah.
So we had Vietnam, prices of things were going up, and it was signaling inflation. Like we talked about earlier, the government started, the Fed started printing more and more currency to pay for the war. And as that currency gets spent into the system, what did we talk about last time? That increase in money supply is inflation. And as a result, prices of things increase, right?
Yeah.
So, during Vietnam, prices of things were going up. Inflation was being signaled, like now. Like, have you guys seen how the prices of different things are going up, like cereal? And if the price isn't going up, then there's creative ways to put...
To make it smaller.
To make smaller, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then in California, they're going to be doing, I guess they're trying to get minimum wage to like $15 by 2020, I believe.
Because people say, hey, we can't afford this stuff anymore because the prices are going up. So they want to make more, but they don't understand that getting paid more for minimum wage isn't a cure to this problem. It's simply putting a Band-Aid on a huge gaping wound, right?
Well, as things are inflating, I mean, wages are going to increase as well. You know?
Sure. But
so, I mean, I think that's just more of a sign of the inflation. Like,
exactly.
It's
to
like,
cure it, you actually got to get to the root of the problem, which is the Fed and inflating the money supply.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Which is, so when you hear these politicians talk about all this stuff, balancing the budget and all this stuff, none of it matters at all until you fix the real problem. That's the Federal Reserve. None of these politicians talk about the Federal Reserve other than you've had Ron Paul talk about it.
It's the F word.
It is the F word. Well, that's how you know
the other F
if
word.
People are being paid by this Eastern establishment, right?
Yep.
So, anyways, back to the Hunt brothers. Their oil operation in Libya that had to deal in dollars, like we talked about earlier. So they invested in silver to hedge that devaluation of the dollar. So when the dollar gets inflated, when more of it gets put in circulation, the prices of things go up, but that's only because the price of the dollar actually went down because there's more of it in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of it for the same amount of goods and services. So it's actually devaluing the dollar. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Right? So they bought silver to hedge against that inflating dollar. And they read a book called Silver in the 70s. And just so you guys know, I'm getting a lot of this information from a YouTube channel that I really like. It's called Truth Never Told. And in that, the host ends up describing this strategy that the Hunt brothers are using as silver bullet, silver shield. He says silver acts as a shield to protect your assets so that if the dollar ever crashes, you still have assets with value, which is silver, right? So it acts as a shield, but it also acts as a bullet to take down that Eastern establishment. So he calls it silver bullet, silver shield. That's kind of cool. So that's where I'm getting a lot of this information from. So the Hunt brothers read a book called, or a report called Silver in the 70s by Jerome Smith. They were convinced after reading that the U.S. government was following John Maynard Keynes' plan to destroy the dollar by inflating it. So John Maynard Keynes is one of the major influential economists. You have your major influential economists that have different views. Is Keynes, Hayek, and Marx. And Marx obviously thought that the government should own everything. And Keynes thought that you could have private ownership of a few things, but that in order to get out of economic crises, the government could spend its way out. It could throw money into the system, and that would rejuvenate the economy because more money would be flowing through the system. That was Keynes. You hear about Keynesian economics.
Yeah.
That's John Maynard Keynes. And then the other major economic influence was Hayek. And Hayek said that the government should be completely out of that at all. And that when the government intervenes in that stuff is when you end up having major economic crises, that they cause economic crises.
And where does the Austrian economics fall?
Definitely under Hayek.
Yeah.
Definitely under Hayek. Yeah. So the Hunt brothers started to suspect that the U.S. government was following John Maynard Keynes' plan to destroy the dollar by inflating it. This would create a huge poor population and a small profiteering class, which would ultimately create a condition needed for Leninist socialism to begin developing. Remember, that's going to exploit the fact that there's an underclass being exploited by an overclass. Well, Keynes said that if you end up having destroying the dollar through inflation, you end up making these classes more pronounced, and you almost guarantee that socialist revolution is going to come about through currency manipulation. Isn't that a trip?
Yeah.
So that's John Maynard Keynes had that plan. So
it doesn't even seem like they're even trying to hide it anymore. I mean, how long have they been printing money since the pusher?
You got the Occupy movement, right? All these people are like, hey, we're the 99%. There's these bankers up top, like Bernie Sanders, and they are right. There are these bankers up top that are making all this money. But a step above that is the financial gurus that say, if we inflate the dollar, we can create this condition in the country that causes these classes to go to war with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting into some shit on the Beacon Podcast.
Shiznit.
So, in that same book that the Hunt brothers were reading, Smith recommended protecting oneself by investing in precious metals, notably silver.
But where are they storing all this stuff? I mean, someone's going to go Die Hard 3 all over their ass, right? I mean,
right. Yeah. Yeah, we do get into that.
Okay.
So they learned that silver is unique in that it has an inelastic demand. And I'll talk about what that means. Usually, as demand of something increases, so does the price of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it will hit a high price that people will no longer pay. So it finds its price. Peace. Yeah. And that's a big part. That's a huge part of Austrian economics is the science behind how prices are derived naturally. Because as demand increases, it hits a price that gets expensive enough to where people no longer want to pay it. And it finds its G spot, its price.
G.
Okay.
Well, I made a good choice in investing in Beanie Babies.
Oh, that's killer.
I followed my mother's advice, and there's a Smartest thing I've ever done.
We got to get a sponsor, man.
Beanie Babies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silver.
You don't remember that? The Beanie Babies?
Like, I remember that.
All the crazy old cat ladies were like hoarding those. Like, they're an investment. They're going to be a collectible. They're going to be worth money.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
But, you know, if people will pay it because of a rarity, then it has like a value is what people will pay for something. People would pay it. Fuck it. I don't think personally, like, I mean, are they valuable now?
Fuck, I don't think so.
I have no Absolutely idea. Not. Maybe they are. Maybe it's the best financial
There's probably
advice.
One golden goose one or something.
My dad's best friend was always like kind of like a business savvy kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And for a while there, he was always talking about inflating in a company called, I think, Screeny Cleanies. And there were Beanie Babies that had like a furry belly, and you could clean off your computer screen.
They would
them,
sit on your desk.
And then they'd sit on your computer or whatever. Screeny Cleanies.
If you name something that rhymes, it'll fucking sell. Oh, that's the only way people stick on to anything.
That makes people sound really, really
Or cool. Any way something's going to make sense is if they make it rhyme, that'll make sense.
Yeah. Rhyme it. Rhyme it, people.
Just make it rhyme, and people will believe you.
But as far as that inelastic demand, so as a price of something is demanded, the price of it goes up until it hits that spot where people no longer want to pay for it. Well, the interesting thing about silver that the Hunt brothers learned is that it doesn't do that. It has what's called an inelastic demand. As it gets more expensive, the demand of it increases. It's really interesting. Which is another reason why we recommend it. So they saw silver as a shield and a bullet. So in 1973, 200,000 ounces of silver were purchased. They purchased 200,000 ounces of silver, and silver quickly doubled in value. At around the same time, the Hunt's oil company in Libya, Gaddafi nationalized all of the oil wells, and the Eastern establishment oil companies that were there paid off Gaddafi in order to be able to continue to operate. And the Hunt brothers' oil companies were nationalized and basically seized. So Hunt felt like he was betrayed by the Rockefellers and the Eastern establishment. Rockefeller headed up most of those companies. Hunt felt like the Rockefellers were leading the Eastern establishment towards socialism. And now we know absolutely that that's true. We had Norman Dodd. Was it Norman Dodd? Ended up doing a investigation into the Eastern establishment's nonprofit foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment, and he was able to dive into their books as part of a Senate investigation into these guys, and found out through their minutes that their whole goal was to turn the America into a socialist country, socialism. Mm. So the Hunt brothers were completely right, and we should do a whole show on that investigation and what they found.
Yeah, I mean, so talking about like America being socialist and all that, I mean, if we don't change, or if enough people don't wake up, like, how much longer until you think we will be? Because, I mean, we had a guy run for president as a socialist, and he had a lot of support, and that scares the shit out of me.
We already are, is the thing.
Yeah.
On this show, we're really going to make the case that we are not free.
Oh,
and that even doing this show is an act of defiance, and it's dangerous. It really is.
Yeah, but don't you hate it when if you say something like that to somebody who's like, you know, say a Trump supporter, typically, there's like, man, the fucking people fought for your freedom, you son of a bitch, and you don't think there's a free country, you can fucking get out.
If you don't like it, leave.
Get the fuck out. And it's just like, dude, you're the one that's saying you're supporting freedom. And it's like, in what fucking word, what does the word freedom mean to you, dude? You know what I mean? It's like,
you know what they do?
What they say is that, like, you ain't no fucking patriot, you know?
Yeah.
You ain't a patriot if you don't support the goddamn...
They're patriots, but they probably couldn't list off one sentence in the Constitution. Right?
Yeah.
what's more patriotic, going killing people for oil or doing a podcast about preserving your rights and educating people on your rights? What's more patriotic, you know?
And they always support, like, police brutality. Like, fucking guy deserved it. Shouldn't have stuck his hand out like that, you know? It's always like...
Dude, that's one of the most ignorant things ever.
Shouldn't do drugs. It's like, they fucking died over a plant.
How about,
you know,
this one?
Cops are kicking doors down and shooting people over a fucking plant, and
shooting
that's a free
their dogs.
Country? Yeah. Like, what the fuck? And they, people support this shit, you know?
Well, what about this one? I see this all the time. People say, hey, if you don't want to get killed, just do what the cops say.
Yeah, and that's freedom. Yeah, that's a fucking free country
so
for you.
What if it's a shitty law? What if it's a shitty law? What
I don't
if it's,
know.
What if it's
I consider that fucking tyranny, if you ask me, dude.
Yeah, no, we should be resisting. And I'm not saying everything that Black Lives Matter does is right, because those people are so screwed up, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think we should support our cops, but we have helped... an environment be created where these cops have to enforce shitty laws. And we the people need to fight back against the legislators making these laws. And we need to regain our freedom that has been taken away. We are not free anymore. Just the simple fact that you have to register your guns means that you don't have the right to keep and bear it.
No.
They've taken that away. And you're asking permission from the government now to be able to do it. You get a background check. They get to say whether or not you can have a gun or not. Is that the right to keep and bear arms?
Yeah, absolutely. Freedom isn't not making a payment to the state so you could have a freedom. You don't, like, buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
You were born with it.
That is what we absolutely have to... The Bill of Rights did not say the rights that the government gives people. It lists the rights that you already have by the nature of being a human being. You have the right to defend yourself, and that's where the right to keep and bear arms comes from. You know what? Hillary and Trump, I found out from watching that debate that they actually do agree on one thing.
Gun control.
Right? They both agreed that if you're on any kind of a list, that you should not be able to
any
have
kind
guns,
of a list.
Right? Did they say that?
Yeah. But we talked about on the show, like, where your neighbor could say, Matt's acting funny and I'm afraid of for his safety, and the government can come confiscate your weapons.
Yep.
So then what? Guess what? Now you're on a list, guilty or not. Most likely not guilty, but...
The funny thing is that Hillary is saying this, and she's being investigated for treason against the country. And she's not on a list, like.
Exactly. But she slipped up with her words, and I wish I would have recorded it and then, like, just had little clips for the show. But she tried to say gun control, and then she started saying gun control, but she stopped and said, strict gun laws, like, you know, because too many mass shootings are happening.
Yeah,
yeah.
If you're on a list, you should not be able to have a weapon.
That's terrific. I agree with you.
He did. He said,
he goes,
that's
I
one
agree
thing
with
I
you
agree.
On that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me continue this because I want to finish this hunt thing before the next break. We got a bit left to go. So by 1974, the hunts had accumulated 55 million ounces of physical silver, and they feared that it was going to get taken from them in America. So they had
55 million ounces?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had it stored in Switzerland for safety, because they feared the government was going to come confiscate it. In 1976, they took delivery of another 20 million ounces through their company that they formed called Great Western United. Hunt put together a deal where he would trade silver to the Philippines for sugar for his refineries. Philippines would trade silver to Saudi Arabia for oil. At the last minute, the IMF, who we talked about earlier, the International Monetary Fund, they squashed the deal. They said that they would refuse to loan the Philippines any more money because they wouldn't recognize silver as an asset. So Hunt suspected the Rockefellers' hand in that when the IMF stepped in. Because the IMF refused to issue the Philippines money, that whole deal got squashed because the Philippines didn't have access to the money anymore. Even though they did have deposits, they had silver, but the IMF said, we're not recognizing that as assets.
Weird.
It's just manipulation by these big establishments. In 1977, the Hunts sold 20 million ounces, and they bought 28% of the Sunshine Silver Mine. So now they're trying to actually get in the business of mining it. In 1979, the Hunts went in with some Saudi sheikhs in a company called International Metals Investment. They sold shares of Sunshine Silver back after an increase in silver price to $8. In that summer, the Hunts and International Metals Investments bought 43 million ounces to be delivered in the fall from COMEX. Okay, COMEX is the Chicago is one of the Chicago mercantile exchanges. Actually, I think it stands for Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and they are one of the major groups that trade these commodities, especially precious metals. So they bought 43 million ounces from in COMEX to be delivered that fall. The price went from $8 to $16. And at that point, other groups started purchasing silver. Like we said, it has an inelastic demand, and as it got more expensive, demand increased. It was hot. Yeah, COMEX stands for Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And then we're also going to talk about COMEX and the CBOT. CBOT is Chicago Board of Exchange. These are all exchanges, and they had stockpiles of silver. So they were selling it. Now, what they prefer to do is sell certificates of it. And they say, we'll hold it in our vaults.
Yeah.
We'll just issue certificates. But they've been caught issuing far more certificates than they actually have stockpiles in their vaults.
Yeah, of course. They're making a profit.
Which is why we recommend on this show buying physical. Actually having it in your possession.
And testing it, I'd imagine.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then you're fucked. I mean, if you test it and it's bad, what are they going to do? Exchange it for you? You're screwed.
Well, maybe you could buy it from somebody that you think is reputable and a small order, test it, and if it passes your test, then you can buy from them. So COMEX and the Chicago Board of Exchange held 120 million ounces of silver in their warehouses, and they just happened to, the board of directors of both of these exchanges had massive short positions. So what a short position is people that have short positions make money when the price of something goes down. What they're essentially doing is they're putting sell orders in. And when you put a sell order in, like we talked about earlier, it pushes the price down. So there are people on the board of directors of both major mercantile exchanges that have investments driving the price of silver down.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we start making the case that the price of silver is being manipulated. Board of directors, major mercantile exchanges, short positions. Okay? So in October of 1979, Paul Volcker, who was the Fed chairman, he's what Janet Yellen is now, what Ben Bernanke and Alan Greenspan used to be. Back in the 70s, it was Paul Volcker. He requested that the banks avoid loaning money for speculation, especially in commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Hunt brothers couldn't get a loan from a bank if the bank knew that they were going to invest it in silver. So Volcker tried to dissuade the banks from issuing loans for commodities. Later that year, the Chicago Board of Exchange increased the margin requirements, making it more expensive, and limited accounts to 3 million silver futures contracts. So what you have happening is that the Hunt brothers are buying more of this silver. The silver that can't be delivered instantly, they have agreements to take physical delivery by fall. So they get the futures contract, which means that they can take delivery of it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're doing these futures contracts, the Chicago Board of Exchange says for any silver futures contracts, you can only have a max of $3 million in them. So now they're starting to limit. So the Hunt brothers start going, they really now are very convinced that there is major money limiting the amount of silver that these guys can have access to. And that really starts piquing their curiosity. And it piques mine too. So any accounts with over $3 million of silver contracts had to liquidate their excess by February of 1980. This would be a sell-off and would have a downward effect on the silver price. Many members of the board of both the COMEX and the Chicago Board of Exchange had major short positions and would benefit from lower prices. They make money when it goes down. Higher prices would cause major costs for those short positions. In January of 1980, the price of silver hit $34 an ounce. The Hunts had $40 million in Switzerland and $90 million with international metals, with $90 more to be delivered in March. Their brother, the Hunts' brother, Lamar, bought 10 million more ounces then. So they're on a silver buying spree at this point. They're getting Saudi investors. They're just buying this stuff because it's the price is skyrocketing. They think that they've actually exploited the Eastern establishment's bullshit. So by January 7th of 1980, COMEX changed the rules to allow only 10 million of contracts per trader. This is now COMEX. CBOT did it before. Mm-hmm. Now they got COMEX doing it. This forced a liquidation of silver excesses of the March delivery. That March delivery that they were supposed to take of 90 million more ounces, they had to liquidate 80 million of that because they could only get 10 million of it. And that drove the price. That would have a downward effect on the price. You have something called the CFTC. That's the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. They are like the court system for these exchanges. Well, they backed the COMEX on their ruling. So a little over a week later, January 17th, silver hit $50 an ounce. The Hunts had $4.5 billion in silver, and $3.5 billion of that were pure profit.
Bitching.
So these guys were making out. A few days later, January 21st, COMEX suspended purchase orders and only accepted sell orders at that point. The price dropped to 39 because they would only take sells. They wouldn't take any buys. Tell me that's not manipulation.
Yeah.
In early February, Hunt took delivery of 26 million more ounces. And then, so just a few months prior to that, Paul Volcker of the Fed, he raised interest rates to 11.75%. On April 12th, he raised it up to 20%. Okay? Now, what the effect that this has, it made borrowing money very expensive. So if you borrowed money, so the people were going crazy over silver now. Yeah. They were borrowing money to invest it in silver. And because the money that they borrowed, they could invest in silver and pay back and still make tons of money. Well, Paul Volcker raised the interest rates up to 20%. So we hear about a hyperinflation in the 70s.
Yeah.
That stems from this whole thing, so that you couldn't borrow money to speculate in silver, the skyrocketing of silver.
Yeah.
This made borrowing money and margin calls too expensive for the Hunts. So for the futures contracts that they had, the way futures contracts work is, say they say, okay, I want 90 million ounces and I want delivery by March. You essentially buy a silver's contract. So you bought the silver, it's coming, but it's a futures contract. You're going to pay that price for future delivery. While they're holding that stock, that silver, you have to pay interest on it. When those interest rates increased on that order, they couldn't afford that extra interest. And so it actually drove the Hunts to bankruptcy. once they started, it just became too expensive at those high of interest rates. So after that, people weren't buying it. They were only allowed to sell it. The price plummeted to $21. The Hunts couldn't find anyone else willing to invest at this point. The Saudis were out. Everybody just, because it started crashing, the price of it. They couldn't afford the $135 million margin call. So that's how much the margin call was. So the CFTC chairman, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and the United States Treasury Secretary began silver monitoring sessions around the clock. They actually held a special meeting to check the activity of silver. On March 27th, was called Silver Thursday. Silver opened at $15 and it closed at $10.80. The stock market crashed at that point. The Hunt's physical silver investment was all around $10 an ounce, while their futures contracts were bought at $35 an ounce. So they lost massive amounts of money. They actually owed $1.5 billion. So they lost the profits that they made. They ended up owing $1.5 billion. They had to claim bankruptcy. And then Bunker Hunt is quoted as saying, quote unquote, "It was almost like the shorts," those people that had short positions, "it was almost like the shorts had the power to manipulate the market, cost the loans a lot of money, and then turn the media on the longs and brand them as speculators." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did. So when we hear about the Hunt brothers historically, we hear that they tried manipulating the market, and that they almost were responsible for the crash.
No.
But they were trying to exploit the Eastern establishment, is what they were trying to do. So the lesson here in this whole Hunt Brothers saga is take physical delivery of everything you purchase. Don't get certificates. Don't buy futures contracts, because interest rates could drive you out of the water on that. Take physical delivery of it. Don't use leverage to buy it. Don't use loans, because the interest rates can go up.
I never even thought of like taking a loan to invest in something. Like, I mean,
sure,
I take out a loan to buy my house or whatever, but like,
yeah,
I never thought I could invest in the stock market or anything else.
If you could make more off of your investment than you have to pay in interest, it's worth it, right?
Yeah. But if the bank could give you the loan, like, what do you tell them? It's just a personal loan, and then you...
Yeah, exactly. What are they going to loan you for? You have to have that kind of credit with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and like we saw earlier, they actually dissuaded the banks from loaning to people that were going to speculate in commodities.
Yeah.
So, and the real lesson too that I want to drive home with this Hunt story is that silver is the bank's Achilles heel, right? Now that we know that that's their weak spot, and that is a way to absolutely bankrupt them, is through physical silver purchasing. Swiss America Trading. Okay, let's take a little break. That was the story of the Hunt brothers, but for us, it absolutely like reinforces our case on silver manipulation.
It wasn't that long ago.
No, and historically, we actually see that there are major groups, major banks. You had the COMEX, the CBOT, the CFTC, the Federal Reserve chairman, all springing to action in 1 week, creating all these regulations when silver started being bought up. Why? What's going on? You know what I mean? So let's take a quick little break. Talks, ladies and gentlemen.
That's how you write a song, Rihanna.
Get yourself.
Bitch, better have my backup singers and horns and badass bass line.
Hell yeah.
He ain't playing around.
And you need that staccato trumpet.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Fuck your couch!
Unity! Man, he had this unity ring. Alright. Money, you can stop talking now. Alright, so, what's happening today in the silver market? The answer is a lot.
I'm gonna invest in it and just put it in my teeth so I always have it.
Hell yeah.
Just.
Hell yeah.
Look like a James Bond villain.
Was that me? That was you.
What's that?
I heard like a ding. Might have been at the end of that
song. That was the end of the song, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think they.
Sounded like a text message coming through.
Gotta have more cowbell.
Maybe Rick James is being texted by one of his bitches. Okay, so. Nowadays, what's happening in silver manipulation? So it makes sense that gold and silver are inflation detectors, mm-hmm. because as the dollar is inflated, as there's more of it in circulation, the price of things goes up. Well, likewise, the price of gold and silver go up. So gold and silver are inflation detectors. And the reason why these major financial institutions want to drive the price of gold and silver down, specifically silver, is because it would signal the true levels of inflation and how outrageous levels of inflation are. Right now you have China, Russia, and India buying up more gold per year than the annual production. They're buying massive amounts of gold. If they announce their supplies, the world will see how much the U.S. has sold them, and the price could skyrocket overnight. Everybody says Fort Knox is full of gold. They might be full of shit.
Yeah.
On 9/22 of 2014, China opened up a physical metals market similar to COMEX. So now China is actually opening up their own mercantile exchange because they are basically going to try to call the Eastern establishment's bluff. And they say, hey, if you guys can price the price of gold and silver by demand, and supposedly you guys are honest, so can we. So they're opening up their own physical metals market.
They also recently got their first Hooters.
Did they really?
Yeah, so I was hearing a podcast about that.
Damn.
Lady that does restaurants and stuff.
China's coming up in the world.
But I guess it's like way different. Like, they have spaghetti. Like, every Chinese people love spaghetti, I guess.
Really?
In China. Yeah. So Hooters is like, how are we going to appeal to these Chinese gentlemen? It's like, well,
spaghetti.
Chicks and spaghetti.
Really?
So if I go to China, I'm going to the first stop is Hooters over there.
Spaghetti strap shirts. Spaghetti all things.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird that China gets a Hooters with Italian food.
Yeah.
Whatever. China's like, they'll pay white people to hang out with them. Really? Chinese people. Just because they want to be seen with white people.
Really?
Yeah. It's really weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're kind of painted as, like, our enemy or whatever, but my understanding is, like, they love American culture. Like, the Chinese people.
Yeah. Well, so the...
Usually, sorry to throw us off the topic, but I just literally heard a podcast today on my way here.
Usually,
talking about Hooters opening.
I think what tends to happen is that whatever the world's like dominating power is, usually has like a stylistic appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to a lot of talks from Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's super scoundrel, like horrible person.
Zib,
but. He is he's like a major mover in like geopolitical decisions that like our government makes. He helped found the Trilateral Commission. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But you hear that's why when you hear this guy talk, you go, okay, this is important because mm-hmm. major decisions are being made off of what this guy says. And he says something kind of similar is that a lot of countries are emulating America's grassroots democracy feel mm-hmm. that you can be born out of poverty and rise to be a leader. And they're that. So many nations are finding that appealing right now that's why you have a lot of the presidents even go by like Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton, you know, like they go by their like almost like slang names because it's playful and
Slick Willy.
Yeah. But like back in the day, it was like very proper. Like you would have a very professional name. Like, well, it's weird to be called like Jimmy Carter, right? It's Jim.
It's President.
It's Jim Carter, you know, like,
yeah.
Or you know what I mean? Like William Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton would be his like professional name. He's like, call me Bill. It's like got that down home grassroots feel to it. Tony Blair, he's doing it and did it in England, instead of Anthony, you know? But yeah, I think that's why, like, I think that just the American culture has become like, almost like a desired worldwide. So you got the Chinese culture trying to be, you know, very westernized, and a lot of their like traditionalists hate it.
Yeah,
absolutely hate it.
But I mean, you go out on like vacations and cool places. Like, are you looking forward to ever traveling to China, or would you ever go there?
I would love to. I would love to.
It seems interesting.
Yeah,
that in Japan.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Japan kind of. Seems more interesting to me for some reason, but
they'd both be cool.
Yeah,
they both have different histories, but yeah, definitely it would be cool.
But sorry for the getting us off the topic, but
no worries.
Yeah,
it's a podcast. It's what we do. So that could bring to light the true market derived value of physical gold and silver and expose price manipulations. Now that China's opening up their own metals markets, so the CME Group. And Thomson Reuters Corp are going to run the new London Bullion Market Association. So in London, they've been in charge of pricing gold and silver. They've been getting in trouble lately, and they've been being accused of manipulating the prices of gold and silver. So now they're having to switch up their whole process because everybody's on to them. And so the new London Bullion Market Association is what they've made. And silver, the price of silver, which will now, it's now recently changed. It used to just be like five banks meeting and saying, hey, what do we want the price of it to be? Yeah. That's how it was priced. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be an electronic auction-based mechanism to derive the price of silver rather than the 117-year-old method of fixing where major dealers agree to a price over the phone. This is after Deutsche Bank announced that it would no longer participate in price fixing, leaving HSBC and the Bank of Nova Scotia to do the fixing alone. The new system enters orders to trade at a proposed starting price. If there no match exists between the buy and sell orders, an algorithm picks a new price for another round of bidding. Each round lasts less than 30 seconds and data displays showing the bid and ask volumes for each round at the settled rate. Some say this provides more transparency and less susceptibility for market manipulation. So they've even the London system has had to change the way they're doing this because the investors aren't trusting them anymore.
Yeah.
And Asia's doing their own thing to try to expose their bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So another way that the markets, the silver market specifically, is being manipulated low is, and especially JP Morgan is doing this, is a process called naked short selling. So we talked about what short selling was. Short selling is when you say I'm going to short sell stock in Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I borrow the shares, I sell them instantly, that money gets credited to my account with the agreement that I have to buy it back at a later date, some later date. I could buy it tomorrow, I could buy it 5 years from now, whatever I choose, but during the time in between, I have to pay interest on it.
Okay.
If Walmart ends up doing something crazy and there's a shortage of shares, they could do something called a margin call and I have to buy it back at that time. So what this does you would short sell if you wanted the price to go down. And this is how that works. I borrow the shares of Walmart at $100 a share. I sell it instantly and I get $100 in my account. I have to buy it back later. I hope it's going to be $50 a share because I pay back 50, then I pocket 50. I made money if the price goes down. If the price goes up and later I have to buy it at $150 a share, then I actually owe more money. So I lost money if the price goes up and I make money if the price goes down. That's how short selling works. What JP Morgan is doing is they're doing something called naked short selling. Naked is when that actual borrowing of those shares is not in place. They do the short sale, and then before they actually take ownership of that of those shares with the promise to buy them back, they cancel the order. But it still has the same effect on the market of a sell, which causes the price to go down. So they are naked short selling silver, and they've actually had to go to court for naked short selling. So that alone shows that they're manipulating the price of silver to the low side.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal to do that in the United States, but the SEC is who is supposed to investigate these things. They don't enforce it with these big banks. It's all corrupt. They're selling stock that was never owned. That's what it has the effect in the market. It has a sell. It's a sell order. And then as people see the sell order, they'll sell and it can cause a sell off. But they never actually put the order in. Does that make sense? It's called naked short selling. Most ownership, short orders are in only a few major companies, and JP Morgan's the big one. And just the fact that they have all these short positions right there says that they are driving the price down. And here's why. We talked about how a sell order drives the price down. Well, so does a short sell. A short sell order drives the price down. Well, JP Morgan has a huge short position. And just the fact that they have a huge short position means that they are driving the price down. That is another case that they are manipulating the silver market to the low side. And we talked also about that the major reason for driving the price of it down is to disguise the fact that the dollar is so weak right now. So there are a couple of current investigations into this manipulation. There's a civil investigation, and that's being done by the CFTC, who we talked about before in the Hunt case, and we know that they're corrupt. And there's a criminal investigation being done by the Justice Department's Antitrust Division. Would you like to read that article that we got?
Yeah.
We have actually an article of some of these banks being investigated.
So the U.S. Justice Department is investigating whether the world's biggest banks manipulated prices of precious metals such as silver and gold as it pushes to wrap up probes.
I'm sorry, real quick. What's the article called and who's it by?
Okay, this is by Bloomberg. Bank faces U.S. manipulation probe over metals pricing.
And what's the date on that?
This one, February 23rd, 2015.
Okay.
So, yeah, the U.S. Justice Department is investigating whether the world's biggest banks manipulated prices of precious metals such as silver and gold as it pushes to wrap up probes into currency rate rigging, according to people with knowledge of the matter. At least 10 banks, including Barclays, PLC, JP Morgan Chase & Company, and Deutsche Bank AG, are being probed by the Justice Department's Antitrust Division, said one of the people who asked not to be identified because of the matter is confidential. Precious metals have come under scrutiny as authorities around the world investigate allegations that other financial benchmarks have been rigged. While the Justice Department's probe is in its early stages, the Swiss finance regulator included the issue in a November settlement with UBS Group AG over currency rate manipulation. Switzerland's antitrust regulator said Tuesday that it opened a preliminary probe into the possibility of price fixing in the precious metals market. The UK Financial Conduct Authority is continuing to scrutinize firms' behavior in relation to precious metals as part of a continuing supervisory work spurred by the foreign exchange probe. While the FCA doesn't have authority over physical markets, it does regulate derivatives. In that context, it's already issued one fine, ordering Barclays to pay £290 million. That's $447.5 million. And can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
My headphones went out. Sorry about that.
They're out right now.
It's okay. It's back. Sorry.
All right.
I'm sorry. So $447.5 million in May for a former trader who artificially suppressed the price of gold in 2012 using fake positions to avoid triggering a payout to a client. You want to comment on that so far?
No, we can keep going.
HSBC disclosures. HSBC Holdings PLC disclosed Monday that the Justice Department and U.S. commodities regulators have sought documents from the bank on precious metals dealings. The London-based bank, which is under a five-year deferred prosecution agreement with the Justice Department from a previous money laundering settlement, said it is cooperating in the probes. Oh, I got to rotate this thing. A spokesman for the Justice Department and Commodity Futures Trading Commission declined to comment. Chris Hamilton, an FCA spokesman, declined to comment on its reviews. The CFTC, looked into the silver market once before after receiving complaints and closed the probe in 2013, saying there was no basis for action. J.P. Morgan case, and the J.P. Morgan case, allegations of metals market rigging have already come from investors. J.P. Morgan in March 2014 won a federal appeals court ruling dismissing a complaint from investors who accused the bank of manipulating the prices of silver futures and options. The court said investors failed to plausibly allege even a tactic agreement to manipulate prices. HSBC, Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated, Barclays, and Deutsche Bank have also been sued by investors and jewelers over claims they have conspired to manipulate precious metals prices for years. It wasn't immediately clear which areas of precious metals the Justice Department is investigating. While the CFTC and FCA have already reached currency rigging settlements with some banks, the Justice Department's probes are still underway. These foreign exchange manipulation probes are further along than precious metals case. Attorney General Eric Holder said in November the department should reach the first resolutions in the currency investigation relatively soon. The banks under investigation in the metals probe also include Credit Suisse Group, AG, UBS, Goldman Sachs, Societe Generale, SA, Bank of Nova Scotia, and Standard Bank Group Limited, or LTD, the person said. The Wall Street Journal reported late Monday that those banks were being investigated. The banks either declined to comment or didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. conduct issues. The Office of the Controller, the Comptroller of the currency was also part of the November currency rigging settlements. The three banks that reached deals with the OCC, JP Morgan, Citigroup Incorporated, and Bank of America Incorporated, were required to review the identity. Other trading activities that could raise similar market conduct issues, in quotes. Those reviews triggered scrutiny of precious metals trading, another person said. Benchmark rigging probes have prompted procedural changes as well as fines. Control of the London Interbank Offered Rate, used to calculate interest rates, was moved from British Bankers Association to Intercontinental Exchange Group Incorporated. In the wake of that rigging scandal, the Financial Stability Board has advocated extending the trade window used to calculate foreign exchange rates to 5 minutes from 1 minute and charging fees for trades done at those rates, a step some banks have already implemented. For precious metals, the day silver fixing, a price settling ritual dating back a century, was overhauled last year with the help of the London Bullion Market associated with after Deutsche Bank stopped taking a part in the procedure. A similar telephone-based process for platinum and palladium was also replaced by an electronic auction-based system as regulatory scrutiny increased over how market benchmarks are set. And the same will happen to gold fixings next month. The FCA also looked into metals benchmarks and visited members banks involved in the gold fixing last year as part of its review. A person with knowledge of the review said that at the time, it found, quote, no clear evidence. The London gold fixing had been manipulated, an FCA official told Parliamentary Committee in July. The German Financial Regulatory also found no signs of rigging in the gold market. Raymond Rosler, sorry if I messed up your name there, buddy. Raymond, I think it's Raymond. It's a different spelling of Raymond. Rosler, head of banking supervision at BaFin, said in an interview with Handelsblatt in Germany in January. Sorry, my vision sucks. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny nobody wanted to use their names. Yeah.
So because of public outcry, these agencies are having to investigate these major banks in manipulating the price of precious metals, but then they're being exonerated, right, by these major institutions. Mm-hmm. So, just to further kind of argue our case, most precious metals investors are subject to position limits on how many futures they can hold. The only ones exempt are the hedgers, like JP Morgan, who happens to have 25% of the total short positions on all exchanges. JP Morgan has 25% of all short positions in silver. They have a major short stake. They're the largest holder of 90% of silver short positions on New York Mercantile Exchange. So we have the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, we also have a big one in New York. Mm-hmm. On the New York Mercantile Exchange, JP Morgan owns 97% of the silver short positions in that, on that exchange. So JP Morgan is shorting silver when the price goes up in order to increase the supply and drop the price. There's allegations that JP Morgan is misreporting the amount of silver in their vaults and that they are naked short selling shares that it does not have. It's also believed that they are colluding with the Fed in order to keep the silver price so low so that people don't invest in it and ditch the dollar. Because if you ditch the dollar, you put more of it into circulation, demand is decreasing, the value drops. An excessively large position like JP Morgan has that should be protected under the United States antitrust law. They have laws against having an excessively large position that that manipulates the price of something. Mm-hmm. The CFTC, Commodities Futures Trading Commission, is trying to impose commodity position limits for silver, but big banks are fighting them. JP Morgan has a huge paper short position on silver that it got when it acquired Bear Stearns in 2008. The crash of 2008, Bear Stearns went bankrupt. JP Morgan acquired all of Bear Stearns' silver short positions. The fact that alone that one entity holds that large of a short position constitutes manipulation automatically. That drives the price down. And another technique that JP Morgan is using is something called high frequency trading. They place huge sell orders, they scare others into selling, and then they cancel their order. High frequency. They do it super fast. They've got supercomputers that do it. They can do it like in a millionth of a second.
Weird.
Then they buy that silver that just dropped in price at a lower market adjusted price. They can buy it lower then. There happens to be about 143 times more paper silver that is traded than is supplied by the mines. So they know that more certificates are being issued to a degree of 143 times more. That's how much more paper silver is being traded on the markets than actual real silver. But you can actually buy physical real silver, have it delivered to your house at the same price as the paper silver.
Yeah. That's a no-brainer on that one.
A no-brainer. If you're going to buy it, take physical delivery of it. If large amounts of people chose to take physical delivery of their silver futures contracts, the price would explode, and those holding short positions would default. They would default. They would go into financial collapse. Because here's how it goes: if you just bought a stock, it's called a long position, and you're hoping the price goes up, the most you could lose is the amount that you invested in it. Say I bought a stock in Walmart at $100 a share. Mm-hmm. If it drops to, say I bought one share, if it drops to zero, I lost everything I invested. I lost $100. If I got a short position on Walmart and I borrowed it, sold it, I now have $100 with the promise to pay it back at a later date. If it goes down, we talked about how I make money, but if it goes up to $200, I lost all I invested, right? I lost that 100. Mm-hmm. What if it goes up to 500? I lost five times what I actually invested. You can actually lose more than your investment amount on shorts. So that's why a lot of these banks that have major short positions, that's another major reason why they don't want it skyrocketing. Because if they had got a short position at $10 an ounce, if that thing hit $500 an ounce, they would owe 50 times more than what they had originally invested. Damn. It's leveraged. Yeah. It's a leveraged investment. And they don't want that happen. They're going to fight tooth and nails to keep that from happening. I say we take one more break. And then we talk about, we've talked about the past, we've just talked about the present, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the future.
Sweet.
All right.
Word up. Look out for the cops, though. Cash fruit. Word up. 2 for 5s over here, baby. Word up. 2 for 5s. Them niggas got garbage down the way. Word up.
Cash rules everything around me. Cream it.
Yeah. Check this old fly shit out. Word up.
Cash rules everything around me. Cream it. The money.
Here we go. Check this shit. Yo, I grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side. Staying alive was no job. At second hands, moms bounced on old men. So then we moved to Shaolin land. A young dude, you're rocking the gold tooth. Low goose, only way I begin to G-York was drug loot. And let's start it like this, son. Rolling with this one and that one. Pulling out gats for fun. But it was just a dream for the team who was a fiend. Started smoking wools at 16. And running up in gates and doing hits for high stakes. Making my way on fire skates. No question, I was speed for cracks and weed. The combination made my eyes bleed. No question, I would flow off and try to get the ball. Sticking up white boys on ballpoints. My life got no better. Same damn low sweater. Times is rough and tough like leather. Figured out I went the wrong route. So I got with a sick ass click and went all out. Catching keys from front seats. Rolling in MPVs. Every week we make 40 G's. Yo, nigga, respect my. A nigga to check notch. Bow. Move from the gate now.
Cash moves everything around me. Green, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash moves everything around me. Green, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo.
It's been 22 long, hard years. I'm still struggling. Survival got me bugging. But I'm alive on arrival. I'll be back the shape of the streets. To stay awake to the ways of the world. Cause shit is deep. I'm in with the dream. With plans to make cream. But fail. I went to jail at the age of 15. A young punk selling drugs and such. Who never had much. Trying to get a clutch on what I could not. Court play me short, now I face incarceration. Pacing, throwing up states, my destination. Handcuffed in back of a bus, 40 of us. Life as a shorty shouldn't be so rough. But as the world turned, I learned life was hell. Living in the world no different from a cell. Every day I skate from takes, giving checks. Selling bass, smoking bones in the staircase. Though I don't know why I chose to smoke cess. I guess that's the time when I'm not depressed. But I'm still depressed, and I ask, what's it worth? Ready to give up, so I seek the old earth. Who explain working hard may help you maintain. To learn to overcome the heartaches and pain. You got stick up kids, corrupt cops, and crack rocks and stray shots. All on a block that stays hot. Leave it up to me while I be living proof. To kick the truth to the young black youth. The shorties running wild, smoking cess, drinking beer. And ain't trying to hear what I'm kicking in his ear. Neglected for now, but yo, it got to be accepted. That what? The life is hectic.
Bro, he creamed it.
Yeah. Nice. Wu and Tang. Y'all.
Probably one of the best groups ever.
I never really got into them much. But I like it.
I like Method Man a lot. Well, we're back with the Beacon Podcast. Hope you're having a good time. Thanks for downloading. If you are a beer connoisseur like ourselves, we would recommend, I don't typically, I'm not a big fan of war, but this beer called War Pigeon by Drake's Brewing Company is pretty kick-ass. So that's what we're enjoying today on today's show. War Pigeon. So now we're going to be talking about the future. And is it bleak, Matt, or is it looking good?
Well, depends on what you do. So just to put it in perspective for people on how potentially powerful silver is, we already talked about some of its demands on the other episode, but we talked about how it's used in over I think 10,000 different applications industrially. Has all sorts of, it's like the best conductor of heat of all the metals, the best conductor of electricity, the most reflective. It has, it's used in war. A lot of weaponry uses it. It's used in circuitry, but it's used in such microscopic, minuscule amounts that it's, you would never recover it from what you're getting. Like it's, it's meshed into fabrics. So they actually think that silver could be the first element that goes extinct because it's used in such fashions that recovering it is almost impossible.
Yeah.
So we keep using more of it in applications like that, but not recovering it. Like most gold that's ever been mined is still in people's vaults. Most silver that's ever been mined is in trash heaps. I actually have a stat. Silver mined throughout history. There's been about 1,411,000 tons mined throughout history. Almost half of that, 634,000 tons of that, is lost. It's gone. And we have about 777,000 tons that are still in existence. Most gold that's ever been mined is still in existence. So the amount of it keeps going down. The possible amount that we have keeps going down. There are about $6+ trillion worth of gold above ground in existence, in possession. Guess 6 trillion in gold. Guess how much in silver there is in possession.
I would have to say like half of that.
There's 30 billion.
Oh, wow.
Hardly any. There's hardly any silver out there above ground. Wow. All the amount that gets mined gets used industrially.
For electronics and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yep. It's crazy. Starting in May of 2016, China has about, that it reports, it has about 1,885 metric tons of silver stockpiled. That's up from 358 metric tons a year ago. They've increased their supply of silver stockpiles almost sixfold in 1 year. 1 year. JP Morgan has been accumulating massive amounts of physical silver. While they're shorting paper silver, they're accumulating physical silver. JP Morgan is right now. They've accumulated about 67 million ounces of physical silver. That's up from about 5 million in 2012. They had 5 million in 2012. Now they have almost 70 million. So it looks like a race to acquire silver between JP Morgan and China. Interesting. They are gradually accumulating physical silver, JP Morgan, while they hold their short positions in the futures contracts. So it drives the price down, and they accumulate the physical silver while the price is down. This is JP Morgan is doing this. This keeps the price down for them to buy physical. Also, this keeps the price down so it won't signal inflation and a weak dollar, because JP Morgan is entrenched in the financial Federal Reserve system. They're a member bank of the Federal Reserve system. It would show massive theft through inflation if we actually had a silver skyrocket. It would show that the dollar is inflated, and it would show inflation is theft. Basically, it's a hidden tax is what it is. So, on April 21st of 2016, China began independently pricing gold and silver in Shanghai to keep the London gold fix system honest. We talked about that, right? As economic instability increases and we hit negative interest rates, accounting for inflation, and the threat of bail-ins, people won't want to store their money in the banks. So what I foresee happening in the future is we've had interest rates at just about zero now. And that's so that people will borrow money because our system is a debt-based system. And if you guys, I don't have time to go into explaining how our monetary system works. If you guys want to know that, listen to our episode called Monopoly Money. And we talked about how money, currency is dollars, are borrowed into existence. And then debt is owed upon that as well. And so in order for this system to keep working, more money has to keep coming into the system. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a huge Ponzi scheme. So, the Federal Reserve and the Eastern establishment needs this Ponzi scheme to continue, they have to make money cheap to borrow. So we've basically been at zero interest rates. If they rose the interest rates, you know how the government went bankrupt in 1933? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be able to pay the minimum payment on those interest rates if the Federal Reserve rose the interest rates. So they have to keep them at just about zero. And what I honestly think they're going to do is they're going to have negative interest rates where the borrower of money is actually basically paid to borrow the money.
I can't imagine that.
Japan's already doing it.
Whoa.
Japan is already doing it because they need people. They need borrowing. They need to keep the system going. And what it does, we'll have to do a whole episode on it because it flips an economy around completely.
Yeah, now, if you're getting paid on a loan, you're just going to spend the money anyway, then you're investing in the market.
And the major reason is because there's going to be a war on cash. And it's eventually going to be these big banks and the Eastern establishment, what their plan is to create a cashless society where all financial transactions are done electronically. It's all tracked. It's all traced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this way they say that they're going, all the articles and everything I've read from that establishment says that they plan on doing this because they want to make sure that everybody is paying their fair share in taxes. You've got drug dealers that aren't paying taxes. Well, if there's no cash and everything's electronic, then it can all be traced. But we see now the ability of tyranny to thrive in that type of system, right?
Yeah.
So if they have negative interest rates, if for you to have your money in a bank, you have to pay for it to be in the bank, what are you going to do?
Take it out of the bank.
You're going to take it out of the bank. You're going to hold it.
Yeah.
It's going to crash the system, and the system will crash, and they'll blame the crash on hoarders. Historically, what do we know? FDR.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. When there's, it would cause a bank run. And the system would crash. And what they would do is they would outlaw holding cash. And with it would come gold and silver. Why I really think it's very important that people buy physical precious metals. Specifically, I would say silver has a better value because of everything that we've outlined here.
Yeah.
But that's what I believe is coming, is negative interest rates. So in that case, people will flock to precious metals. And the Asian Infrastructure Bank will keep the metals market honest so we can see the actual real price, and it'll skyrocket. In 2001, China actually used to have laws against owning precious metals. In 2001, China made owning physical silver legal. In 2003, they began actively encouraging private ownership of physical silver. China's doing this. And since then, they have been mining... They have been minting silver coins, increasing the amounts every year. When you see the stats, I should have those stats, but I don't. But every year, China's minting more and more silver coins and encouraging their population to own it.
Oh, wow.
What are we doing here in America? Probably the exact opposite, yeah. Right?
We'll give you a paper for it.
Last year, China free-floated their currency to ours. Prior to last year, China's yuan, it's called the yuan renminbi, was pegged. The price of the value of their currency was pegged to our currency. They pegged it. Last year, they free floated it. So they allowed their currency to do whatever aside from what ours does. And what I'm doing is I'm making the case that China is making major steps to become a world financial leader and take the power away from the Eastern establishment and the London banking financial system. So last year, China free-floated their currency to ours, and they're no longer pegging the value of the yuan renminbi to the dollar. And also, they were accepted into the IMF's special drawing rights. So the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, acts as the world's central bank, and they issue loans to countries in debt, which are all countries are in debt. IMF is the one issuing the loans. Well, now they're issuing loans in something called SDRs, special drawing rights. And different countries make up their currencies, make up the SDR. That is the US dollar, the British pound, the Japanese yen, the euro, and now just got accepted into the IMF's SDR is the Chinese yuan renminbi. Just got accepted into it. At the Beacon Podcast, what we think is going to happen is that the next major world's reserve currency is going to be a bond issued, and it's going to be a gold-backed multi-special drawing rights SDR bond, and that governments will borrow those things, and that's going to be the next world reserve currency. And also, negative interest rates are coming. There's going to be a run on the banks. Cash is going to be blamed. Cash is going to be outlawed. And the price of precious metals is going to go through the roof. But realistically, all you're doing when you invest in silver is to protect your savings on what's coming. The devaluation of the dollar, the outlawing of cash, so that you'll actually be able to have something to exchange for goods. So that is the research that we have on silver manipulation and
good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff, huh?
I'm going to go out and get some silver, man.
Like I said, you guys can call Swiss America Trading, and you can set yourself up on a purchase plan to where you just buy a certain amount a month, and it just automatically comes to your door. One thing that I've really liked buying is junk silver. It's not newly minted silver coins, 99% pure. It was the Kennedy half dollars from back in the day. It's actually, I think, pre-1960s silver currency.
Oh, wow.
And it's 90% pure. And you can buy a bag of that stuff for cheap. It comes in like a burlap bag, just loose.
Weird.
Yeah. And you can shine it up, you can do whatever you want, but you're getting silver. You're getting actual silver content, the precious metal silver. Highly, highly recommend that. Again, Swiss America Trading, their number is 602-788-4653. Ask for Gary Belson. Tell him that you heard about them on the Beacon Podcast, please. What else you got, buddy?
That's it for me, man.
What's coming up this week? Another debate. I think they got another
number
debate
of vice
up.
Presidential candidates. No, the big thing for me right now is Dodger games. It's Vin Scully's last year as the broadcaster. My brother and I went to the last home game. Tonight is his last broadcast.
So he's like a Dodgers broadcaster?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about him.
Vin Scully is the best sports broadcaster there ever was.
What makes him good?
Just the way he... he's super intelligent. He like does his homework on every player. Has great stories about the history of baseball. The way he just calls the game. Like nowadays, it's like two or three guys, and they're just talking about the fucking Kardashians and Twitter and stuff. Like they don't even tell you about the game hardly. They're
really
it sucks. Like, but that's how good he was, you know. But he's retiring. So that's a big deal. I mean, my whole life, I grew up listening to him, and probably a big reason why I'm a Dodgers fan. But
And he's specifically a Dodgers?
Yeah. He's a Dodgers home.
He's actually in the stadium there. Calling he's not on, like, TV. Like, he's not on a channel or anything.
No, like, if you watch... Well, when they used to play the games on television out here, he would be the one broadcasting it live. Mm-hmm. But for the past couple of years, he would just do the first four innings, and then they'd go to these other guys. But
really,
yeah,
wonder why that.
But he did it for like 60 years. He came from Brooklyn. The Dodgers were in Brooklyn. He was an announcer there, and then they moved out here.
He followed the Dodgers.
Yeah,
wow.
He was their announcer. Yeah, he came to LA. Was calling them when they were playing out in the Coliseum, and now here, and you know, Dodger Stadium. Has a lot of history.
I'm not too much into sports other than UFC, mm-hmm. but I can appreciate somebody that pours themselves into their craft.
Yeah,
you know,
he like, absolutely does. Dude.
If he's doing all that research on all the players, and that's cool. You know, there's value to that.
Yeah,
I think it's cool.
So yeah, that's a big weekend for me on that. And then I was lucky enough to go to the game. Like, you know, we were supposed to record last weekend, but it was my grandma's funeral, and so my brother was in town. And our family likes to party, you know. And somehow everyone had talked my brother into shaving his head, like razor shaving it.
Yeah.
And everyone started putting money in, and it was like $200. It got up to $200. And where this had originated from was like about 5 years ago, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe longer, but one of my uncles was having a 4th of July party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be a little small barbecue, hang out, go swimming. Well, it turned into drinking a shitload of margaritas. And my other uncle, his brother-in-law, it just got the drunkest I've ever seen him on tequila, right? But a happy drunk, funny as hell. And we're like, we should shave your head. Somehow, I don't know where the idea came from. And so it was my Uncle Jordy, who's always had like long, kind of like 70s flowy hair, like...
Mm-hmm.
Sat down, we all pitched in $100, like we got $100 together and shaved his head for $100.
Damn.
And my aunt was pissed.
She likes his hair.
Yeah, she's his whole life he's had like kind of like long, not long hair, but you know,
he did it for a hundo.
Yeah, well, and earlier that day my girlfriend was working, so she came over to the party after work, and she had her hair all done and this and that. I think she was just meeting the family.
They're like, shave it.
Yeah, well, no when she showed up earlier that day, and it was like her second time meeting her family or whatever, we were having like a water balloon fight, and water fights, like squirt guns and hoses and water balloons, and she walked out onto the patio, and my uncle, who shaved his head, sprayed her with a hose and messed her hair all up, and she's like all bummed out, right? Well, that night, he's by this time hammered. He didn't think anybody, any of us would pull together $100 mm-hmm. to shave his head.
Yeah.
So I put in $20. You know, some of the kids go to their piggy banks. They pull out like $5-$10. Marina was a waitress at the time. Pulls out, here's $60. Bam. $100 like that.
Damn, gang.
So, they shaved his head. So, ever since then, every time the family gets together, we're always trying to get someone to shave their head once we're all hammered or whatever. Well, this time it was my brother. I was actually in the seat first just because I was drunk.
You were going to do it?
Yeah, I sat down, and I'm so glad I didn't do it.
Your hair's short already.
Yeah, but it's getting thin anyways. But so I'm sitting there, and Marina actually takes the buzzers out of this guy's hand. That was one of my uncle's buddies that was going to shave my head.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. She talked some sense into me. Like, I'm so glad I didn't shave my head. Uh-huh. And my brother, he's like, shit, I'll do it. He was planning on just shaving his head anyway because he's like going bald. Okay. But he's like big and buff, and it looks good on him. I'd look like an AIDS patient. So it turns out he gets $200 to shave his head. The next day, this is like the day. This is like the party after my grandma's funeral. So the next day we're sitting there, and I'm like, so you want to go to Dodger game? Like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I just made $200. He's going online. Went to the last home game where Vin Scully was announcing, and it was a magical day. They won.
Was everybody cheering Scully?
Oh, absolutely. People were crying. I almost cried. Yeah, I almost cried.
Really?
I got choked up.
Do people get into it?
Dude, I mean, he's like everyone's grandfather there. You know how nice he is. He's super classy. He never trashes anybody. Like, you learn about other players from other teams, and just an awesome class act guy.
Okay.
So that's the big deal in my life at the moment.
Nice. Now he's totally done, or he has one more game.
Tonight's his last broadcast.
Oh, tonight.
In regular season broadcasting. So
let that be a lesson to you guys. I don't know.
But yeah, he's broadcasting for the Giants, who are the Dodgers' rivals. But I don't really give a fuck. It's like, I don't get into the hatred of
the team. Is that because it's California?
They actually came from New York, and so did the Dodgers Brooklyn. And so it came from back there.
Who came first?
But the Dodgers came out here first, I believe.
So the Dodgers are like, hey, Giants, you're kind of jogging.
But they've always been
style.
In the same division. You know, so you're battling for the World Series, and you got to beat each other out.
Okay.
I don't really give a shit. I just like to watch a baseball, and I don't hate Giants fans or anything. You know?
I just can't get into sports that much. Yeah. I just don't have the time.
No.
But it's interesting. Like, the one sport I can get into is UFC.
Yeah.
Which is MMA. Actually starting to turn a little bit into a Jerry Springer show now. You got all these guys like, oh, you know, like, there's just drama in the fights. You know, and it's like, it's almost like politics now. Like,
it's almost like boxing too. Some of them are a little mobbed up, you know?
For sure. It's, I don't know if I like where it's going. I like the sport as a sport. Like, it's a really cool showcase of somebody's like physical abilities. Is it the ability to fight,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah, I think it's like a really entertaining thing.
Yeah. I mean, martial arts, boxing, it's just, if you're not going to do it to get in the cage, it's a great way to stay in shape, and you know, you got to dig deep. Those guys really have to dig deep to do what they do.
And prior to lately, it's always like been celebrated. Like, the humility has always been it, like, really celebrated. Like, even after a guy knocks another guy out, like, he'll go up to him, make sure he's okay, congratulate him for the good fight, the honor to be able to fight him, you know. And now it's like, you know, like last week, I think I saw one of those fat heavyweights, old country.
Yeah. Roy Nelson.
Roy Nelson. He,
big country.
It's kind of admirable that he didn't like that the referee, who is Big John McCarthy, he didn't like that Big John McCarthy didn't stop a fight early enough because Big Country thought he knocked out Bigfoot. The guy's name's Bigfoot that he was fighting. He thought he knocked him out, but McCarthy didn't call the fight, and so he had to keep pounding him, and he was pissed that he had to keep pounding him. He's like, dude, he was out. And
yeah, you're pounding an unconscious guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be weird.
He felt bad about that, and so when McCarthy was down,
he should just went, doop, doop.
Did you see that fight?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, so when McCarthy was down, like, taking care of Bigfoot when he was knocked out, Big Country came up and actually kicked Big John over.
No shit.
Yeah, because he was pissed.
That's fucking weird.
He was like, you know, pissed that he had to keep knocking out this guy who's already clearly knocked out, that he didn't call it, you know?
I mean, why can't he just throw his hands up and be like, pointing at the unconscious guy?
Probably should have, you know? But, you know, I don't know.
You gotta wait till he gets in there and waves him off?
Yeah, I guess. But so the sport's kind of becoming a little bit more like gangster, WWF. Like you were saying. Like Conor McGregor is always talking shit to everybody he's going to fight. And, you know, there's like a cockiness that's taking over. Where back in the day, it was like, I felt like it was like Randy Couture, who's like super humble, honored to fight his, opponents. And you got guys, I don't know. It just seems like it's changing a little bit. Dan Henderson is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to fight coming up.
Oh, cool.
He's fighting Bisping for the title.
Nice. That's going to be a good one.
Oh, dude.
Bisping's good.
Bisping's good. It's going to be awesome. It's both like old school guys. So, yeah, it's going to be cool.
Are you happy that Big John McCarthy's back? Because he, like, left the UFC.
Yeah, I actually think he's a great ref.
Yeah, he was one of the OG ones.
Yeah.
But he left for whatever reason. He didn't agree with Dana White or something, or...
He started his own thing, too.
He has a gym out here.
I don't even think that those refs are appointed by the UFC. They might be appointed by the Nevada Gaming Commission. Like, I know that a lot of the judges, they're appointed by the Nevada Gaming Commission and not the UFC. Like, it's like an independent body.
But it's always the same refs. I mean, but for a long time, he was like, no, I'm out of this.
I've seen some of those refs in other fight companies.
Yeah, like Bellator and
yeah. I've seen some of those refs do those, so I don't know.
But am I wrong? I thought McCarthy like bailed on him. Like,
I don't know.
I don't want to be a part of this company for a while.
I don't know, but he got kicked over. Like,
I'm gonna look
week.
That up. I gotta see this.
Yeah, I don't know. So, all right, let's call it.
Cool,
ladies and gentlemen. That is our case for silver manipulation. Like we said on our earlier shows, you're only gonna get honest, like, true good research a few places nowadays, and so seek those out, whatever they may be. You don't have to listen to the Beacon Podcast, but we promise here at the Beacon Podcast to always be honest and always do our due diligence in our research. So I hope you liked the series on silver manipulation. I hope we made a good case. And please hit us up. We'd like to have a conversation with you guys. Hit us up on our social media. Hit us up on Facebook, on Twitter. Email us. And, you can find us on Facebook and you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Another thing that you can find us on is YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. Just search for the Beacon Podcast. Nick, you got anything else?
Thank you for downloading. We love you.
Peace.
You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. You got to have a con. You got to have a con. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. You got to have a con. Got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. Cause it's all about money. Ain't a damn thing funny.
Imagine if you find yourself included in the 99% who have no idea where that stolen money was spent. Occupy a Manhattan in a tent cause they were foreclosed upon or they couldn't pay their rent. Just imagine being pillaged and looted, there's no need to. 99% of you are included. 1% profited with super speed. When you own the media, it's easier to hide your greed. They try to paint these protesters as hippies, but most of them were working like slaves in the 60s. They don't want to interview Julie. She don't have no piercings, don't smell like patchouli. The system's a lion, listen to the engine roar. That's what the young communist league was invented for. Chanting socialist slogans as they plead, people bleed while the money changes keep hiding in greed. Their capital is infinite. That's how they brought the fucking Senate.
That's how they had their dream.
It's a cult they invented.
How could they be so callous? And ivory towers arranging genocides, they're cowards. It stems from greed and lack of real power. Control freaks setting goals on top of dealing powders. Food in the hands of the few, carnivorous. Family feud, the new farm is us. Labor units kept just like designer seeds. It's payday for Monsanto, they need to hide their greed. The deadly sin tipped the scale off, it's broken. Israel Moses Warburg, soft spoken. Quoted often, cash demands the manslaughter. Include the women and children, executive order. How could they be so callous? Usually it's usury, trickle down accountants. Trillions printed from minted souls. Indeed to hide their greed behind the business code. Business code.
Their capital is infinite. That's how they want the fucking Senate.
That's how they had their dream.
It's a cult they invented.
They need to hide their dream.
No one's left.
They'll let you hide.
suits mean business. Neck tires are abject liars. Check the statistics.
Got you marching and thinking it's all sweet. If you were serious, you'd set fire to Wall Street. Occupy all you need, but it's frivolous until you kill the money changer's greed. Wealth and power only lead to disease, and these guys got it bad. People, please. How many dollar signs does it take to make you blind? Just how many yachts at one time can you skate behind? What will it take for you to break the paradigm? Can't you hear the Pentagon propaganda parrot line? Or does your television give you everything you need, keeping you distracted from the money addicts?
October 31st, I was at a costume party. Everybody came dressed to the nines, pulling up in Porsches, wearing homeless outfits, and even carrying some cardboard signs. One said, I've been foreclosed upon, as the gentleman sipped on a cheap bottle of wine. And everything stays copacetic indeed, as long as these money junkies, money junkies, money junkies, money junkies.